It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
Hello crew, I am Chris Dover and welcome back to Firearm Friday. Well, this week I think we're going to have a very good and interesting conversation. We've got Aaron Paulette in the house with us here, and Aaron is the founder and media coordinator with Operation Blazing Sword, and also does some work, I believe, with Pink Pistols as well. But first, let's talk a little bit about eye protection. Yeah, you know, you only get two eyes, so it's really important that you protect those eyes. But you know, all eye protection out there is not created equal. So if you're out there specifically in the shooting sports world, maybe you're an instructor, spend a lot of time on the range, the odds of something going wrong, the odds of an accident increase with the frequency at which you shoot and you're out on the range. So a lot of times you do not want to scrimp on your protective eyewear. That's where Hunter's HD Gold comes into play. And what's cool about their glasses is they have the technology that changes the, I guess it would be the tint, according to the lighting situations outside, which is really awesome. One pair of glasses, it's kind of a one and done deal. Now keep in mind, they also offer their high quality glasses in prescription as well. Check out what they have to offer over there on huntershdgold.com. All right, crew, welcome back. We've got Aaron, who is the founder and media coordinator with Blazing Swords. How are you, Aaron?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me.
It was great getting to meet with you, however short it was at the NRA meeting there. I know everybody running around was really busy and had things to do, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on today and talk with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This is one of the things that is well within my mission statement. I'm happy to talk to anybody from the press, friendly or hostile, and you are definitely friendly.
Well, I don't know. That may be subjective. We'll save that. We'll save that for the end. You can judge it at the end.
Well, I mean, I think it'd be far more insulting that I called you press.
Right. As long as you don't call me, I guess mainstream media or something like that. We're all good.
All right.
Wow, whole different subject of the day. So, hopefully, what we'll talk about most of all today, I want to talk a little bit about you first starting out. I would love to know, and I know in the pre-chat before we started recording, you kind of gave me a little bit of insight on your upbringing, where you came from. But you know, it's always a curiosity of mine when I'm talking with folks, whatever, whether they're activists, advocates, in the media, inside the firearm industry, whatever. It's interesting to know their background, because some people grew up around firearms. Some people were around that a lot, avid hunters at youth, maybe even used shooting sports stuff. It runs the gamut, and then some people found that later in life, which is completely okay. So as far as your upbringing and the role that firearms may or may not have played in your life, what was that like?
Well, I think I sort of straddle both ends. On the one hand, I grew up with them. On the other hand, I came into them later than life. Now, let me explain to you what that means. My father was career Army, and so from birth until high school, he was active duty, and just guns were in the house from pretty much the moment I was aware of them. And at a very young age, I want to say around six, my parents gave me the gun safety lesson. It really wasn't a lecture. Their version of it was they brought me into the bedroom where they kept their guns, and they just had pistols. And they had them unloaded. And my mom and dad said, okay, now here are our guns, because we know you're at that age where you might end up finding them, playing with them. And we want you to know that, you know, these are not toys, but if you have any questions, just, you know, ask them now. And they basically said, okay, under our supervision, you're going to play with these unloaded guns. And, you know, I picked one up, and the first thing I did was I looked down the barrel, because that's what every kid does. And my parents did that. No, don't do that.
Right.
And I looked at them for about 5 minutes, and they were big, and they were heavy, and they were boring. You know, they didn't make sounds when I pulled the trigger. It was too heavy to be a toy, and so it was just, okay, thanks, this is boring, can I go play now?
Right.
And they said, yeah, sure. And the mystery was gone, and I had no interest in them until much later in life. I mean, I still played, you know, War and Cops and Robbers, whatever, with my friends, but, sure. You know, those were play guns. They made sounds. They weren't heavy, dumb pieces of metal from a kid's perspective. And I really didn't touch another gun until college when I was in ROTC.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And, yeah, I tried to do my bit for my country. I was medically discharged. It's something that bothers me, but I tried. And so that was my first real experience with the AR-15. Or, I'm sorry, in that case, it actually was an M16. And I did okay. I have terrible vision. And then when I was discharged from the military, that... It kind of put me into a spiral, because it was like, this is the one thing I wanted to do, and now I can't do it.
Right.
And I had to figure out my life. And so then that's another many years. And my current interest in firearms, it really was an outgrowth of emergency preparedness. I live in Florida, where we have all sorts of natural disasters. You know, we've got hurricanes that come in, and you see them coming, and they can just wipe the state clean. And we've got forest fires, and we've sometimes got tornadoes. And I just thought, you know, I live in a state where all these things can happen. I should be prepared. Mm-hmm. And so I got into it right as the prepper craze was starting. And I, you know, I've got a bug out bag, I've got evacuation routes, I've got all these things, and I prepared for disasters. And then the more I got into prepping, I rather quickly realized that there are other things to be prepared for other than disasters, like being attacked, being being mugged, being in a mass shooting. And so it was just a really natural and organic evolution from being prepared for these natural disasters to being prepared for disasters by other human beings. And that's how I came to concealed carry. And it's not just the pistol. I carry a tourniquet. I carry a first aid kit.
Absolutely.
I have all these things because I realize that in any emergency that involves me, I am my own first responder.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think the medical side is often forgotten. Followed back on that with some of your experience, would you say that at this point... You fall more along the advocate and the activist side, or more along enthusiast? I guess would enthusiast be an appropriate label? Do you like the different models, and do you kind of geek out on the different calibers and certain things like that? Or for you, is it more that being prepared and having that inalienable right?
Why can't it be both?
It absolutely can. I was just, you know, just curious. I talk to some people sometime that are, you know, they're staunch advocates and stuff like that. But, you know, they're like, yeah, okay, I've got a rifle. I've got a pistol. You know, I go to the range. I train. I practice. I do all of these things. But I don't go to gun shows and salivate over every single table, you know, like some folks do. So was just curious where you was in that spectrum of... I don't know. The phrase gun nut gets thrown around a lot. Is whether or not you're a gun nut or not.
I am a firearms enthusiast.
There you go.
Most of my work these days is as a Second Amendment advocate, and that's just an outgrowth of Operation Blazing Sword and then Pink Pistols and the podcast that I'm on. And so I am more hands-on in terms of the laws and the public perception and all of those things are related to firearms activism. Mm-hmm. I enjoy shooting. I don't have enough guns.
Who does, right?
I don't have money for all the guns, and I don't go shooting as often as I'd like because ammunition is expensive and I'm busy spending my time either working my jobs, my activism, or earning money so that I can go shooting. So I don't know as much as I'd like about guns because I don't have enough time to shoot them. Mm-hmm. So I'm never going to claim to be an expert on things handgun or any sort of firearm, really, although I am very passionate about my Mosin Nagant.
Those are iconic, for sure.
I think I know more about that than any of my other firearms. Mm-hmm. But, I'm perfectly happy to admit that I'm ignorant, and I will happily let other people speak.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, and I think that it's, as far as all of that goes, I think as long as we know our limitations, we don't pretend to be somebody we're not, in that regard, and try to BS our way, through a conversation. I think that's where it's at. There's nothing wrong with not knowing everything in life. I certainly know a lot about firearms, but I know quite a bit about cars, for example. But there's many, many things in this world that I'm ignorant on, and it does not bother me to admit that. And then that gives me the opportunity too to ask questions and learn things, because I'm a big believer, if you don't go through every day of your life learning something, then you're probably not living life the way you need to.
Absolutely.
Now I want to jump off on a bit of a tangent here, because it was something that it was something that caught my attention. I'd pulled up your Facebook and was kind of looking around. It was after we had met at NRA or something like that, and you've got a line in there that says you specialize in the weird and the apocalyptic.
Right.
And I'm thinking, what in the world does that mean?
Well, actually, that was a line that I came up with before I got started in my firearms activism, and I was working heavily with my emergency preparedness, and I was doing a lot of product reviews. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, the apocalyptic meant, emergency is the end of the world, because mm-hmm. a lot of preppers are just, they've got an acronym for it, Teotihuacan, the end of the world as we know it.
Right.
And a lot of the preps are for the more glamorous things. The country descends into anarchy. You have an EMP that knocks out all electronics. Zombies rise from the dead, that sort of thing. Everyone wants to prepare for the really sexy sort of Mad Max stuff.
Right, the Hollywood apocalypse.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And honestly, I'm a writer. I went with that because it was catchy. When really what people should be prepared for are the far more likely events, like car wreck, catastrophic illness of you or a loved one, losing your home due to a fire, losing your job. You prepare for the most likely first, and then you prepare for the increasingly least likely, and unfortunately it's the least likely ones that are the sexiest in terms of Hollywood.
Sure. Right. I mean, everybody wants that zombie apocalypse, right? We almost root for it in some way,
Oh yes.
Now, switching gears back to a little more serious, there's some ignorance on my part when it comes to Blazing Swords, and then the relationship between Blazing Swords and Pink Pistols, and which came first, and what the missions for each are. It would appear that with Blazing Swords, that's more of the advocacy toward training, maybe, or something. Can you kind of explain the differences in between those two?
Absolutely, and your impression is correct. So here's what happened. I was a member of the Pink Pistols first and foremost. Then the Pulse terror attacks happened, and a lot of people were afraid that I was actually involved in that. I'm actually in another town about an hour's drive away, but
wow.
they were really worried. It's like, Aaron, are you okay? Pretty, are you alive?
Right, still pretty close to home, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, they happened in Orlando. I live in Daytona Beach. It's 60 miles away. How long it takes to get there depends on traffic. But, for people who don't know anything about Florida, it's right next to each other, I understand. And so what I saw, I didn't know anything about it. I had just gotten up. It was Sunday morning. I was having my coffee. I was wondering, what are these people going on about? Of course I'm all right. And I started looking into it, and I was aghast like everyone else was.
Right.
And what I saw just within hours of that was this wonderful outpouring of support from gun owners. And this is noteworthy. It won't come as a surprise to you, but it comes as a surprise to a lot of people.
Sure.
Because, you know, we've been told just for decades that gun owners, they're all allegedly, you know, hard right, conservative, heterosexual white men who hate gay people.
Sure.
And yet I saw these same people who were saying on social media, I don't care that you're gay. I don't care who you sleep with, what your politics are, what you have between your legs. You are a human being. You have the inalienable right to defend your life. Your life is precious. And so as a result of this, if you want to learn how to shoot a gun for self-defense and learn how to carry one, I am happy to teach you, and I will pay for everything. I'll take you to the range. I'll pay for all the ammo. I'll provide the iPro, the EarPro, all that other stuff. You just have to come, and I will teach you.
Right.
And I thought this was fantastic, because not only is it breaking down that cultural divide based on politics, but also, well, if someone is thinking about getting into a hobby or a lifestyle, the first question is always, well, how much is it going to cost?
Exactly.
And so the more cost, the higher the bar. And, you know, even if you want to go shooting, there's that initial outlay. I mean, especially if you have to rent the firearms. Okay, so that's like, you know, $50 for the gun. And, you know, then there's the range fees, the targets, the ammo, the iPro, the EarPro, all that sort of stuff. And you can easily run about $100. And if someone doesn't know that they want to shoot guns, that is a really high bar. And they'll go, I don't know if I want to spend that much. I might not like it. You know, I mean, all TV and movies say that it's a bad, horrible thing. Maybe I shouldn't. Mm-hmm. But if you have someone who is, you know, doing the ice cream man approach of the first one's free.
Exactly.
Hey, come on. Don't worry about it. I'll pay for everything. Just come in, pull the trigger. You'll have a great time. Then it's just, okay, so I'm spending an hour. And, you know, if I don't like it, I've just spent an hour, you know? Yeah, no big deal. And I thought this was fantastic. But the problem with social media is that we all live in our own little echo chambers, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Now, yeah, so this wonderful message was not being seen by the people who needed to hear it. But because I have my feet in both camps, because I'm a gun owner and I'm queer, I go, okay, I can bridge the two. And that was the very beginning of Operation Blazing Sword, where I just said, hey, I'm going to make a list of these people who are offering to take queer people to the range for free. And, you know, I'll just put it on my page, and that'll be it, is what I thought. And it just exploded into Operation Blazing Sword. So here we are. We're coming up on our third anniversary.
Wow.
We've got, oh, I haven't done a recent check. But last time I checked, we had over 1,650 volunteer instructors. That's every single state. That's every major metropolitan area. We have, 5 in Canada, I believe. Mm-hmm. 2 or 3 in Australia, where they're helping to grow the gun culture there where they need it. We got a couple in Europe.
Yeah,
just let me finish off this one thing, because it's a really important stat. Since we founded it, we have averaged training one person in firearms safety and operation. It's like one person every other week.
Wow.
For the past 3 years. Now, I want to qualify that. Those are the ones that are reported. Mm-hmm. I don't require people to out themselves. There are some people who are saying, look, I want to learn, but I don't want other people in my community to know.
Right.
Because there's that stigma in the queer community.
Well, and there's a stigma in any community, because some people live in a very liberal community, right?
Exactly.
Regardless of that orientation.
Oh gosh. Oh, I could branch this so many ways. One of the things that I really love about Operation Blazing Sword is that, well, whenever you teach something, you learn something. And so there's learning and communication going both ways. And so when a queer person goes and gets training, not only are they learning about guns, but they're learning about gun owners. And gun owners are learning about queer people. And they're seeing just how we're more alike than different. And a perfect example of this, and it ties into what you just said, in the early days of Blazing Sword, I got an email from someone who said, you know, I believe in what you're doing. I really want to help. I'm not sure how comfortable I am with my name and my contact information on a publicly searchable database saying that I'm a gun owner. Because he lived in a gun-unfriendly state.
Right.
And, you know, I understood. I was sympathetic. I suggested that he get a throwaway Gmail address just to get some anonymity. But I saw an opportunity to have a teachable moment. And I said, now, I want you to understand something. You are worried about being outed as a gun owner. In close to the same way that some queer people are afraid of being outed as being queer, mm-hmm. especially if they live in very conservative states. And there was that moment of, oh,
right.
That is just so wonderful.
Right.
And so those numbers, those are the only ones we know about. I'm not going to require people, you know, give me their name and where and when they were taught. Mm-hmm. So I could conceivably be teaching more. I don't know. I don't need to know. I just know that I am doing a good thing here, and I'm getting the message to the people who need it the most.
Right. Now, with with these volunteers and with this training, you know, I was reading on there, doesn't all appear to be certified trainers, right? There's a lot of, just enthusiasts that's been into it for many years, you know, willing to just branch out and help those that are new, that are coming into the community, that are interested. What is required, if there are trainers or other people out there to be able to get associated with that?
Okay. Well, obviously, we will give top billing to anyone who has certified training.
Sure.
Because you clearly know what you're doing. So if you have training with the NRA, USCCA, Liberal Gun Club, whatever, if you are a certified trainer, we will put you at the top of the list for your geographical area. But I recognize that if I only wanted trainers, I would have a much smaller list. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is that we have people who are learning how to shoot firearms on a daily basis from people who are not trainers. And, well, I don't even know if I'd call it training, to be honest, because training involves a certain amount of professional instruction. I mean, this is just the basics.
More safety and familiarity is what it sounds like.
Exactly. It's, well, the big thing is knocking off that fear of the unknown. Because you have people who have never shot a gun before, they may never have even seen a gun before. Mm-hmm. And so some of the most important part is just the range safety briefing.
Right.
And so, you know, here are the rules of gun safety. And here's how you make a gun safe. And honestly, if that's all someone is taught, I mean, I think that should be mandatory training for teenagers in high school, along with driver's ed. We should have gun ed. Mm-hmm. And so if nothing else, if you know how to safely handle a gun and how to unload it, fantastic. And from there, it's just the basics of, well, okay, if you want to use a gun for self-defense, all right, well, here's how you load it. Here's how you properly aim it. You know, here are the stances you should have. And just go through about a magazine's worth of ammunition just so that they know what it's like. And from there, they can make that informed decision. And so, no, it's not any sort of formalized training, but I know that there are gun owners out there who have taken their wives, their girlfriends, brothers, sisters, friends, children to the range, and they have taught them the basics. And that's really what it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I don't want to take money away from professional trainers. So again, it's that first taste. And so if someone goes to the range and says, hey, this is fun, how do I learn more? I want to get professional training. That you can say, oh, hey, I know this guy over here. He does a real good job. Or many times, it's the actual professional trainers themselves who are saying, well, actually, here's my card, mm-hmm. and here are my rates, and I'm happy to give you actual high-quality training. So really, if you feel that you can teach people the basics safely and you're willing to provide a firearm and one magazine's worth of ammunition, and you can provide a target and iPro and AirPro and pay for their range fees, great. That's all that I need. Contact me, and I will put you on the list.
Yeah, and you know, I find, and I'm sure it's that way with the LGBTQ community, and I think you've said queer a lot. Do you say that because the alphabet soup is so hard you get tongue-tied saying that? Is that why you use that word?
Yes, exactly. I can say
I say gay a lot. Is that okay?
Okay, it doesn't bother me. Oh, okay. Not everyone who is queer is gay.
It doesn't bother you, is what you're saying. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm not offended.
Right.
But yeah, I have been championing queer for quite a long time now, because all right, LGBTQ is fine. You can get fairly good at it if you practice.
Right.
But there is just this tendency to, in the name of inclusivity, add more letters that only further exclude.
Sure.
Because right now it's LGBTQQIIAP2A+. I mean, there is just no way to put that into a sentence.
Right.
It's impossible. But queer.
Right.
It's a word. Everyone knows how to say it. It's easy. It rolls off the tongue. It's a nice umbrella term.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, everyone who's listening, you have my permission. Go ahead, say queer. If anyone gives you any problems, you send them to me. I'll set them straight.
Right. I got you. Okay. Well, we'll run with that. Then back to the whole training and the familiarization and stuff like that. You know, I would think that the queer community is they're obviously just like anybody else that's getting into this for the first time and new. And I find that a lot of those people – they have hang-ups, right? It's either they've been swayed by popular culture, society, the media, whatever it might be, or they have some kind of bad experience. Somebody in their family, maybe even themselves, were a victim of some type of violence. I try to stay away from the whole gun violence issue because violence is violence. It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
But themselves are someone they knew, so that, you know, they have some kind of a hang up, and often that's an emotional. It's obviously an emotional issue when you're dealing with that. And for the firearm community at large, we tend to throw around sometimes this thing that, well, they're just running on emotion, or they're just being emotional about this, and we fail to realize often that for that person, those emotions are a real thing. Whether they're validated or not, whether they're accurate or not, whether they're warranted or not, they're real things that person is experiencing. And so, you know, I think a lot of times when you're talking about these trainers and there's certain levels and then there's just people out there that want to be volunteers and help, those people that are just volunteers and help, I think, can be potentially instrumental in just making those people feel more comfortable and come to terms with the fact that they're thinking about this inanimate object irrationally, right?
Probably. I mean, I can't speak for certain, but your theory makes sense. The one thing I do want to point out to a lot of your listeners, and it ties into what you just said a bit ago about the whole, well, they're acting emotionally. And I want to talk to all the gentlemen out there who have ladies in their lives. If your lady is reacting emotionally and you tell her, stop, you're being emotional, or worse, stop, you're being irrational, has that ever helped?
Very seldom, I would guess.
Yeah, I think it makes it worse most of the time. And so keep that in mind, because if there is someone who is reacting emotionally to firearms, telling them that has about the same effect as saying, honey, you're overreacting. You need to calm down and be rational. Because then it's like, oh, I'm irrational. Oh, let me tell you something about you.
Right.
And so what I think the best tactic is, and this is something that I have to work with because I get frustrated a lot, is to try and identify with what's going on. Okay, if you're acting emotionally, all right, so what's the emotion here and why? Are you reacting out of fear? Are you reacting out of concern? And this is something that I've talked about before, because, and this is going to be a tough pill for some people to swallow, but I believe that while gun control advocates are misguided, I believe that their heart is in the wrong, I believe that their heart is in the right place, and here's why. They want to stop innocent people from dying. And stopping innocent people from dying is inherently noble. Thing is, pro-gun people, we also want innocent people to stop dying. Mm-hmm. We just disagree on how to implement this.
Right.
And if you can tell yourself that we still have the same desire, we're just coming at it from a different angle, you know, you've got that point of contact. You've got at least one thing in common, as opposed to, we got nothing in common, we can't talk. Mm-hmm. And so just try and build from there. It's about building from similarities, like with the instructor realizing what it was like to be queer in a conservative state, whereas, you know, while he was gun owner in an anti-gun state. It's that same sort of, okay, yeah, we agree on this one thing, let's try and build on that.
Right. Yeah, it's that old adage that you can teach anybody anything. It's just a matter of relating the material, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that common point to relate on. Shifting into the gun culture within the queer community a little bit, it seems as though, I know you mentioned the events at the Pulse nightclub earlier, and a lot of folks would say that was kind of a tipping point for a lot of people. It appeared, though, that I've seen the groundswell within that community years before the Pulse thing even happened. What is your take on how the gun culture has changed within the queer community?
Well, you've piqued my interest. What was this groundswell of interest in guns in the queer community before Pulse?
Well, it just seemed like there was groups on Facebook. That was kind of more of a Facebook thing, I think, that I seen.
Okay, well, that was possibly Pink Pistols. And the Pink Pistols have been in existence since, well, I think they were created around 99, but they formally came into existence around 2000. So, yeah, we're coming up on 20 years.
That's still a long time, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so Pink Pistols was founded on the principle of armed gays don't get bashed. And so, again, this was back when, you know, it was the gays versus queer people. And so, yeah, the idea was, okay, there are people who want to hurt us. We should exercise our Second Amendment right to defend ourselves. But even back then, there was this stigma against it. Because if there wasn't a stigma, you wouldn't need the Pink Pistols. It would just be, I'm a gun owner and I'm gay.
Exactly.
But because there is this stigma, there is this need for the Pink Pistols, and each chapter is a combination of shooting club / support group. Mm-hmm. Because within the queer community, if you are outed as a gun owner, you will be quite frequently named, shamed, and blamed. Mm-hmm. You will be excluded. You will be exiled socially. Right. And in a creepy coincidence, it's really very similar to what happened back in the 70s and 80s when someone came out as being gay. It's like, oh, you're one of those. Get away from me.
Right. Right. And it's contradictory to the goal, in a way, right? I mean, you know, the queer community wanting to be accepted, and then within their own ranks, shunning those that are different.
Yeah, there's just a whole lot of cultural baggage about that, and I'm happy to explain it to you, but I mean, I think that'll take at least another half hour.
I would wager that it would, and you know, it's not necessary, except to say that, you know, again, I mean, we talk about commonality in the different, I don't know, the different sects, the different pockets, the different groups, the different communities that we tend to divide ourselves into a lot of times. And it's the same way. I mean, you can even talk about the firearm community at large and relate that. Okay, I mean, we're all here. We're all pro gun. We're all 2A. Oh well, you like revolvers, right? That's
9
all.
9mm versus 45.
You know, yeah, exactly. The caliber shaming. The, you know, what position do you carry your firearm in? You know, all of these other little silly things that, I don't know. It just takes and it dilutes a lot of times. It dilutes the camaraderie and kind of keeps us from all standing together like we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So on, you know, kind of a hot button question, I guess, for you in a way, and I'm sure you've probably answered this before, but, you know, I do like to ask this one because it's interesting mm-hmm. to hear everybody's own take. As far as the Second Amendment, what does those words mean to you?
Okay, you're clearly asking for something more than I agree. So, what?
It could be that simple. Does that, well, for some people, it's, you know, it's as simple as the text. It's there, hey, it guarantees my right to keep and bear. For some people, it's, you know, they focus more on this keeps, you know, this is the stalwart, the wall that in which it, you know, keeps tyranny at bay. For others, it's, you know, it exacerbates the right to self-preservation. I don't know. You just get a lot of different answers from people when you ask what it personally means to them.
Okay, I get what you're talking about. You're asking more in the visceral personal sense as opposed to a political interpretation.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
The way that I see the Second Amendment, it is a recognition of the natural right of all living beings to defend themselves. And so, because we are tool-using creatures, we therefore have the natural right to defend ourselves using the most efficient, effective means possible. Because I get so tired of people who are saying, well, you just fight like a man. Okay, so men on average are a foot taller, 50 to 100 pounds heavier, and about 6 inches more reach than the average woman. That's not fair. That's disparity of force.
Right.
Just run away. Okay, so what about the 80-year-old grandmother in a wheelchair or on a walker? How does she run away? You know, and when you start pointing out, because I guess for whatever reason, people are thinking in terms of fair fights. And no, crime is not fair. Criminals are predators, and predators prey on the easy prey. You know, they don't look for a fair fight, because that's how predators get hurt. Mm-hmm. And so the entire point of firearms is evening that playing field, or even better, tilting it my advantage. You know, what I hear so often is, well, if someone just wants something, give it to them. Well, what if they want your life? You know, what if they want your body to rape? Mm-hmm. You have the right to say no, mm-hmm. and you're going to have to die for the privilege.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what I see in the Second Amendment. It gives me ultimate bodily autonomy.
Right. Right. The responsibility to take responsibility of your safety and security, basically. I don't disagree with that. And most people that answer that question, I can't disagree at all. For me, it falls into, you know, and I say for me, it's not even for me, but yeah, the questions, or the answers rather, when I ask that question, are always interesting, because, you know, where I come down on it to an extent is that that is a guarantee. It is a guarantee of the three things that are paramount. Those three inalienable truths, which is life, liberty, and happiness. And you can
pursuit of happiness. Actual happiness is not guaranteed.
Well, pursuit, yes. But original interpretation. I think that was originally property, even. that was there, which would make sense. I mean, if we work hard, we're certainly entitled to those things we earn. The second, if you think about it, I mean, to be able to keep those things, to be able to defend our life is paramount. And like you say, that's kind of where you come down, being able to do that with the most effective means possible. You look at liberty. That's where the, you know, three percenters, the, you know, the stalwart against the federal governments and things like that come into play. And then happiness can mean a bunch of different things. You want a huge firearm collection because you just like Old West firearms or whatever the case may be, or maybe you're a shooting sports competitor, and that brings you happiness. And, you know, as long as those things aren't infringing upon somebody else, then I don't see the problem with it. Moving on to something else, still along the Second Amendment lines, though, there's, especially with the NRA, and again, this is one of those topics that can really get into a six-hour conversation if you're not careful, and I don't really want to go down that road. But we all know about the chaos and the turmoil and the things going on surrounding the NRA.
Oh, honey, I was there.
But the question is, that has for a while now sparked a conversation, which is great, about what other organizations are out there that we support, that we need to support, that we need to be paying attention to. So outside of the NRA, are there other organizations that you're aware of, you follow, that you may support?
All right, so when you say organizations, do you mean political? Do you mean training? What exactly do you mean?
Pro 2A, as long as I guess they were positive efforts for the Second Amendment, for the preservation of the Second Amendment.
Yeah, there are plenty, and here's the problem. When I list these, a lot of your listeners are not going to like them, because unfortunately, the Second Amendment has become linked to conservatism. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem that I have with the current branch of the NRA, current iteration of the NRA, because it is very, very hard right currently. And
I agree. Dana Lash just aggravates the bejesus out of me.
but you are not alone. There are a lot of people who have declared their lack of support for the NRA because of the hard right that is NRA TV. Mm. And if you'll permit me just a brief tangent here.
Absolutely.
This is part of the problem, because the Second Amendment should not be a conservative thing. It shouldn't be a white thing. It shouldn't be a male thing. It should be an American thing. But unfortunately, the current attack of NRA TV is to go, well, if you are pro-Second Amendment, then you are also anti-abortion and anti-immigration, pro-borders, pro-this, anti-that. And there are a lot of people out there who are pro-gun, but who are not hardcore conservative, who are saying, but what if I like guns and I believe in a woman's right to choose? I don't feel represented. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the problem. And so gun clubs or organizations that have spouted up, I don't know if I'd really call them in opposition to the NRA, but as an alternative, they do tend to define themselves as not the NRA. Mm-hmm. And so because the NRA is currently very conservative, these alternate organizations have a very liberal slant to them. So first of all, we've got the Liberal Gun Club. It is what it says. Mm-hmm. Just they're Second Amendment supporters, but they're liberal. Then you've got the John Brown Gun Club, which is related in a way that I'm still not entirely clear on to Redneck Revolt, which has some ties to Antifa, and there are people who feel very strongly about that, which I will not touch on. And then finally, there's the Socialist Gun Club. I'm not entirely certain how that works, but they claim to be both socialist and pro-Second Amendment. So there are alternates out there, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, just every single one of them, including the NRA, they're all charged politically. And I really think we should have a neutral firearms group. Now, there are things such as the Gun Owners of America, mm-hmm. Firearms Policy Coalition, Second Amendment Foundation. Those, however, Second Amendment Foundation is definitely in the lawfare area. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't really so much represent gun owners, but they fight against unjust gun laws. So they help gun owners, but it's not the broad spectrum of things, because the core mission of the NRA is supposed to be two things: firearms education and Second Amendment advocacy.
Right.
And so the groups that I listed, Liberal Gun Club, John Brown, things like that, they are in the firearms education and training aspect. These other ones, Second Amendment Foundation, Gun Owners of America, FPC, those are more in the Second Amendment advocacy group. And they're the ones who have filed against the bump stock ban, for example.
Right.
So there are different options, but they have both sort of calved off, and they've each taken half of the NRA's purview. And I really, really hope that the NRA gets its act together, because it's currently on fire. And, well, I do not want the nation's oldest civil rights organization to die.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But as it stands right now, it is so very terribly off track that while I would prefer, I avidly desire that it returns to its roots, but the more I look into it, the more I'm afraid that there's no coming back from this. When it goes, it's going to leave a huge vacuum. Because,
yes,
again, you have no single entity that can adequately do both things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of these organizations that I mentioned are so much smaller than the NRA.
Right.
And when it goes, there's going to be a huge vacuum.
Yes.
And I hope I'm really worried that when that happens is when the anti-right gun grabbers like Bloomberg will use it to their advantage. And I suppose that's one advantage of the NRA problem happening now, although it's a little too close to the 2020 elections for
right.
my liking,
right.
Because, I mean, this would be so much worse if we had an anti-gun president in office. And, you know, hopefully things can be brought under control now, but, okay, so just imagine if things don't get resolved, and then, you know, God forbid, in 2020, someone like Kamala Harris or Buttigieg or whoever is elected to the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can tell you that they are going to direct the IRS to investigate and destroy the NRA for financial malfeasance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what's going on in New York State right now, where the NRA is incorporated. They're under investigation for being out of compliance for a nonprofit. And so just imagine this on a national scale.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bad enough under Trump, who is on guns. I'm not going to say he's good.
Right.
He's better than Hillary would have been.
Right, exactly.
But man, if you get an anti-gun president in office and the NRA doesn't have its act together, it's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
I know that was a really long answer to your question. I'm sorry.
No, and I totally agree with that. I mean, the thing that worries me are the things, not the political, not the lobbying, not the legislative necessarily things that the NRA does, but and that's where all the problems are, honestly, with the NRA. It's not the grassroots, the efforts on the ground with these instructors and the competition arms and all of the other things, but you know, if it all crumbles and that goes away too, that was the original intent, the original premise, the original foundation, many, many, many years ago, for the NRA, was that safety and training and education and outreach and all of that, and to lose that massive amount of infrastructure and everything that's in play and all of the history and tradition and everything else that goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many of the competitions that we see and things like that are, you know, under NRA guidelines, under NRA rules, done in an NRA sanctioned range, all of this other stuff. And there's bigger ties to that that I get into as, you know, with being an NRA instructor and everything, is that, you know, one of the reasons that I have to be is because the general liability insurance policy that covers me requires that, because that's the old school whatever benchmark, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the NRA goes away. I don't have, I still have that certification, but the NRA is not there to hold those credentials, which
exactly
is what the insurance requires, and then I'm done for training at that point.
Yeah, I mean, NRA certification is the only firearm certification that is recognized nationwide.
Right.
And the others just have them in clusters, but they aren't recognized by every single state. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that is a big threat to the gun culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because we need to grow it. We need to teach our youth. I mean, the NRA has Eddie Eagle, the only gun safety program that I think actually works. Plus, they help sponsor shooting competitions for high schoolers. You know, there are still some high schools that have gun clubs. And so when that goes away, it's bad.
Yeah, that bothers me. I mean, over the whole legislative, you know, like you talked about, the malfeasance and the foul play and the cronyism and just everything else that you know, typically boils down to legislative efforts. And it's sad that it's gotten to that point. So yeah, I guess that's a pretty good thing to end on right there. We is the NRA, but I want to give you a couple of minutes to talk about how folks get in touch with you, can get over to Blazing Sword, how they can get more information on all of this. How do they do that?
Okay, well, anyone who wants to become a volunteer for Operation Blazing Sword, just email me. That's Aaron, E-R-I-N, at blazingsword.org. If you want to learn more, we have several Facebook groups. So I didn't get into this, unfortunately, but as of last year, I also became the national coordinator for Pink Pistols.
Oh,
so I started as a Pink Pistol. Our organizations branched off and were sister organizations for a while. Mm-hmm. And then the previous head of Pink Pistols stepped down for health reasons. She's still on the board. She's still advising me. And so now I'm running both. And so it's right hand, left hand, or Army and, or no, not Army. Oh, good God. like Navy and Marines,
right.
You know. So Pink Pistols has been incorporated into Operation Blazing Sword, and this is important, you see, because Blazing Sword is a 501c3 tax deductible charity.
Okay.
And so I can now raise funds on a national level and distribute them to chapters who, you know, if they want to go to a pride festival but they can't afford a booth, mm-hmm. No problem, I'll raise money, I'll donate it to them. And so that was my goal, and I'm trying just to help each chapter thrive. So if you want to find out if there's a Pink Pistol chapter in your area, go to pinkpistols.org, and that's our webpage, or you can go to, well, you'll have to search for Pink Pistols on Facebook, because it's facebook.com/groups/a-whole-bunch-of-numbers.
Right. They don't make it easy.
Exactly. Operation Blazing Sword, you can find us at blazingsword.org or facebook.com/Operation Blazing Sword. Or you can just search for us in the bar. I also have a public figure page for people who want to keep up with what I'm doing, what I'm saying, because I'm frequently going places and giving speeches. And that would be Aaron Paulette, Operation Blazing Sword. Just search for me and you can find me. And so just across those platforms, you will have a really good idea of what's going on.
Well, that is... That's awesome. I've learned a lot, and especially that Socialist Gun Club. I'm glad that we went down that road. I know you said some people may not be happy about those, but, you know, it's all about learning things, right? And I had no clue, so I've got to go look that up now and read up on that and kind of figure out what they're doing to kind of form my opinion on that. I can't give you one just off that. It sounds weird, that's for sure. Almost sounds like an oxymoron, but yeah, definitely got to go look that up. So I thank you, Aaron, for coming on and talking with us, and hopefully we can have you back in the future.
My absolute pleasure. Ask me back anytime.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.